What in hell did it do? Jenny,
did you say daddy is? Is it daddy is IOU? Is that what he says?
I think is that it's Janie's last IOU. I thought
Janie's last IOU.
I don't know.
What does she owe?
It's Janie's last IOU. It's just a little bit of blood. What did her daddy do? It's Janie's last IOU. She had to take him down easy. Everybody, if you're just tuning in, it's because I just started the show and I left this in because I'm the editor of this thing. So you're stuck with me on Bat and Spider episode 190.
Oh my God.
I don't know, Chuck. What do you want me to say?
What's going on? I don't know.
I'm sweating buckets over here.
I'll have what he's having.
Is that what you want me to say? I have sweatpants on that I might have to take off mid-show.
You've got a swimming pool on that desk chair. That's what's happening. I forgot. It's hot. It's hot already.
The sweat that's pulling up on my fupa right now is, it would make Jenny and her girl gang vomit.
Blush.
With sickness. And they support fupas.
Yeah.
That gang.
We better put the noise filtering on, or else we're going to hear a lot of splashing from Dale's underneath. Yes. A lot of splashing over there.
Yep. Anyway, we're back. We're here. 198 episodes in. We're so close to 200, and who knows what's going to happen after that. Is the show continuing? That's the question that everybody keeps asking us, but mum is the word.
Yeah, I'm not Silence. Even sure we'll make it to 200. Who knows? Anything could happen.
Yeah.
Especially after this story I tell you in the front half of this show. So stay tuned after the advertising break, because you're going to want to hear this.
Yeah, me too, because that's something we didn't discuss in the business meeting before the show. So, like, I just got shit pains. So I'm sure you folks out there, too. But this week for the show, we watched Jenny's got a gun.
A Jun for Gunifer.
I'm going to say, a gun for Jennifer. A Jun for Gennifer.
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, gosh, strap in. I know I say that a lot, but I'm serious about this. Each strap in.
Yeah.
Especially you boys, because get ready. It's your turn.
Just a little bit of bite.
I'm going to be annoying. I am not. I'm going to tell you what. The subject matter of this movie and me singing Steven Tyler all night do not meld together, it's happening.
If Steven was in New York City in 1997, he would not get out of the... You would not get out of the city walls alive with these ladies running around taking care of bees.
No. It's true. Whew. That's true. So that's what we're going to do here. And that's what we're going to do because that's what we do on this show. Chuck, catch us up with what happened in the last week. Catch us
okay.
up. Okay. What's been happening?
Well, I don't think I watched any movies, but I did. I don't do many comic conventions these days, but I went to this one in Glens Falls, New York. I probably should have talked about it on air last week, but I forgot.
We're ending the show.
But a small show, you know, a small show, local show. It was in this cool, like, old industrial building that they, like, at some point was turned into artist studios, and there's like three bookstores in there, and The one that put on the show is a half bookstore, half comic shop. Incredible shop, actually. I was like,
sounds amazing.
Totally smitten. It's like the size of my studio, but it had everything I wanted. It was like the perfect shop. When I say studio, I mean my bedroom right here that I'm recording in. It's a great building. Friends of ours that we knew from Providence, we didn't even know it, but they live up there now, and they have their studio printing equipment in the basement. They give us a little tour. God, you should see the paper cutter these guys got. Oh my God.
Really? Whew. Envious?
I think it weighs a ton. One ton.
Oof. It's 2,000 pounds of paper cutting. heavyweight.
Just fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. I was sprung walking through this room. But yeah, it was a fun show. But we were both, Melissa and I were both so tired. Because I think we were nervous. So we didn't sleep great the night before. And also we had to get up real early to drive. It was a couple hours away and it started early. So I was like dead tired. I was like, you know, barely functioning. But we made it through the show, had fun. Driving a couple hours back, we're a half hour away from home. All right. We're in familiar territory. We're in a town. I'm not going to dox myself. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. No names. We're driving down a familiar stretch of road. It's a pretty rural road with, you know, houses everywhere. Am I painting a picture? Is this a great picture for everyone? Do you know what I'm talking about? Houses on roads?
People are triangulating on your location as we speak. You should probably just stop talking about it.
Yeah, I got to get vaguer. Okay. There was no storms. It was windy, very windy the night before. Okay, night before. But no storms, quiet night. The sun had just gone down. We're driving along Dale, and all of a sudden, I think Melissa saw it first. She saw something moving in her peripheral. And all of a sudden, this giant tree just gives way, crashes into power lines, and lands right in front of us on the road. Big tree, big explosion, big electrical explosions from the power lines.
Oh my God.
The grass caught on fire from the electrical wires being severed, I guess. I don't know. It wasn't like 5 feet in front of us, but it was close enough that we were like, oh my God. Like if we were just, you know, all I could kept thinking of, if like we were just a little bit further down the road, it would have been a hairy situation. Like it was scary. Like it was like, oh my God.
Holy crap, dude.
So be careful driving out there. Cause these trees, they do not ask permission when they're going to fall.
Trees have been here long before us, Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
How many trees did we kill to put that road?
Exactly.
How many trees killed did we do? How many trees did we kill to make those power lines?
Those poles. Oh yeah. This tree's staring at these, the corpse of its friend.
Yeah.
To do our technological bidding. It's sick.
It's like, Atlas. This mini version of Atlas holding up these power lines day in, day out. You know, that's scary though.
Yeah, it was legit scary.
Did you have to call somebody?
Yeah, we called 911 right away. And it was funny. I think the whole neighborhood called because they seemed to know where we were. Do they know where you're calling from, like on a cell phone? Do they like have that? They must have that data automatically.
I think they do have that technology.
But it was funny right before, because we called right away, right before I was about to hang up, she was like, okay, is that someone's on their way, blah, blah, blah. And then I saw the grass was on fire. I was like, oh, and the grass is on fire. And then I hung up.
We're leaving now. Goodbye.
But yeah,
we're leaving the scene of the crime. Goodbye.
I mean, thank God no one was hurt. And thank God we skedaddled it out. We did not stick around to, you know, I mean, if someone was hurt, we would have stuck around and been like, hey, this is what happened, you know, but thankfully everyone was fine. There was another car coming the other way too, like that, you know, it just landed in between us, you know, coming the other way on the road.
Jeez.
It's crazy. Dale, how about you? How was your week?
Gee, what did I do? Oh, here's what I did. I took my son to see Godzilla X Kong.
Oh my God, Dale, my life has been so anti-movie lately that I couldn't even consider going to see this movie yet. I want to. Mm-hmm. But give me the scoop. What's your scoop? What's the skinny?
My scoop is I had fun. Good. You know, you think about a movie where Godzilla and Kong are in the same movie.
Yeah.
You're probably going to get some twisted ass, super convoluted reason why they have to team up and fight. Mm-hmm. And guess what? That's what it is. But Godzilla and Kong team up and fight.
Okay, cool.
So that's all you need to know. Like it delivers in the digital animation. You cool. know, the five humans in this the five humans in this movie, I mean, they have to be to just like they're spending their whole day in front of a green screen. They're spending 3 months in front of a green. What are they doing? What like they must be in they must be in, going insane at this point in the in these kind of movies. But they're probably like, you know what, we're gonna do it for the two big guys standing behind us that will be there in another year when they're digitally edited in. Like this is for them, our performances here. This is for them, and I had a play. It was a great time at the cinema. You know, this is you know, coming off of Godzilla Minus One, Chuck. We have to remember this is not that Godzilla. This is mobile Godzilla, can use his forearms as
this is Hollywood Godzilla.
This is Hollywood Godzilla, and you know what? I'm not mad at it.
This is pro wrestler Godzilla.
Yes, exactly. This is King of the Monsters.
Yeah. Wow. Cool.
That's my quick and dirty of that. What else?
What about your son? What does your son think of this movie? I'm curious.
Oh my gosh. On a scale of 5 stars, he gave it 4.899999
really?
Stars.
Wow.
Because he said he as of right now, he couldn't deliver a 5-star review to any movie. He doesn't think.
See, he's smart.
He doesn't know if he could. Yeah. He is smart.
He knows.
He's a smart cookie, that one.
That's great. That's fantastic.
So we had fun at the theater.
Popcorn?
To see that. We went with YouTube's Brian Rummel and nice. His son.
That was family fun. Affair. Popcorn? Nachos? Hot dogs?
I got popcorn.
Good and plenty?
I got a Pepsi. Because of Regal's...
Controversial.
Yeah.
Please. CM Punk over here.
I got that delicious Pepsi that I would wear its branding on my skin if I could. And my son got a soft pretzel and stole my popcorn because I couldn't finish it anyway. So.
Yeah.
I almost got peanut butter M&Ms, but I did not.
Mm.
You ever have Goldberg's peanut chews? You remember those, Chuck?
Oh, right? I love those. I used to live when I was a. When I didn't eat any animal products for about a decade of my life, those were my go-to candies because they're vegan, believe it or not.
Oh, are they really?
Yeah. The dark ones, not the dark ones. The red wrapper, but the blue one is milk chocolate, but the original ones are, they have no milk in them, so.
I have fond memories of being able to go to a movie theater and buy a movie theater size box of Goldberg's peanut chews, and they're get like 18 to 24 of those suckers in there.
Yeah. And it takes time because it's like, they're work. You got to chew those suckers.
They're work.
Yeah.
Especially me. I would put a half of one or one in my mouth and just suckle it until all the chocolate was gone. And then I would suckle the peanut chew and that's inside of it.
Wow. God. Dale, see, you're making me, see, now I'm wondering if I even live in a region that sells them. Because if I remember correctly, are they made in York, Pennsylvania?
I know they're used to be. Yeah, they were Philadelphia based on the packaging, so York is probably conceivable.
Gosh, I'm worried I can't buy them. I've seen them in a long time.
I know a bigger company bought them, but they still use the old time branding.
Okay.
Let's do it. I mean, we're only 14 minutes in. I'm gonna Goldberg's. Peanut chews.
Regional candy talk. That's like Red Vines, Dale. Have you ever had Red Vines?
I have. Okay. I have had Red Vines.
Do they have Red Vines in the South?
I don't know. Actually.
Not to dox you or anything.
Goldberg's peanut juice. Right on the homepage. Official proud partner of Fly Eagles Fly.
Oh, wow.
It's just a little bit of my just what on it.
I got to get some Goldberg's peanut chews.
Just Born Inc., a family-owned candy manufacturer, also makes Mike and Ike hot tamales and Peeps brand marshmallow candies.
Ah. Dale, could you imagine if Goldberg's could be our sponsor, our show sponsor?
Should we do something?
And we pivot to a video form because we wear giant hats that are in the shape of peanut chews, the wrappers, you know. And we're contractually obligated to wear these every show.
The red ones. Yes.
Yeah. And
Chuck, what's your zip code? I won't put it on the air, but
just a little bitty baby.
I'm getting some hits, Chuck. Just rest easy for okay. just a second. I went 20 miles out from your zip code.
Okay.
Stop and Shop.
They have them? Okay. That's good.
There's two Stop and Shops on the 20 miles out. 11. Yeah. So check them out.
Okay. That's good to know. I don't go there often, but it can be on my rounds. I really need some peanut juice.
But to sour things up just a little bit.
Oh no, what?
I'm not getting any hits in my zip code.
Oh my God.
100 miles out, no hits. Fuck.
Now see, oh, that sucks. It must still be a regional thing, huh?
Yeah. How can we be official sponsors?
Well, if we start advertising, they're going to have to.
My God. The amount of like peanut chews I'll just have stacked up behind me. I'll have to give them out to people who stop by the house. I can't wait.
The amount of work convincing Generation Z that these are good. God. It's going to be a lot of work. But we can do it. I'm up for it.
Yeah, I'm up for that too. I wouldn't be up for convincing Gen Z of much of anything, but yeah. I would do it for peanut chews.
Peanut chews? Yeah. I think it's worth it.
It's worth it. It's freaking worth it. Chuck, this week for the show, we watched a little movie called A Gun for Jennifer that you picked.
I did.
Tell me, Chuck, in your best estimation of a movie synopsis, what this is about.
Jennifer was a housewife in Ohio, and she was coupled with a man with violent tendencies. He treated her badly, Dale. He's a bad man. Things went too far one day, and Jennifer, in self-defense, skewered her husband with a kitchen knife. And she hit the road, Jack. She found herself getting off a bus or a train in New York City in 1997, which I guess was still, New York City had not been Mickey Mouse-ified. It wasn't cleaned up necessarily yet. So it was still, you could still film a movie there and it being a scary place. So she ends up there and she's immediately taken advantage of by some local men who hang out at the bus stop, apparently, waiting for fresh arrived women. God, this all sounds... But thank God, because our vigilante group of female justice enactors, they fucking end these guys. They take them out.
Yeah.
They make Jennifer do it. Take her attacker out with a handgun. Unceremoniously, she finds herself in the gang, Dale. And she, whether she likes it or not, this is her new life, working at a dive bar, strip club, and murdering rapists at night. And this is an exploitation movie. I don't think we've watched an exploitation movie this hard on the exploitation in a while. This does not shy away from showing you things. But it is, I gotta say, I was rooting for these women. I was really hoping for a big happy ending. And I guess we kind of get it, but holy cow, A Gun for Jennifer. I'm going to stop rambling. Dale, Gun for Jennifer. Are you mad at me? Do you love me?
Oh my God.
Are you indifferent?
we haven't been treated to something like this in a while for the show. That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, I mean, I loved this movie, Chuck. Yeah. Loved it. More specifically, I loved how not by the numbers this rape revenge story was. That was my one sentence synopsis, but you brought it up when you were talking about it. Jennifer never intended to be a vigilante, but the people that she ends up hooking up with force her. They essentially force her to join the gang. And right then and there, like the the core group of women are just off on the wrong foot already. And they have this tenuous relationship where they're snapping back and forth at each other. They all have a singular goal in mind.
Yeah.
But they all have different ways of how they should handle it. And Jennifer never, she's like, I want to say Stockholmed into being a vigilante, but like through just repeated offenses, repeated crimes, she is like numbed to it. Like she finally gets basically on board with it after being forced to repeatedly be a part of it until she eventually sees what the rest of the women see. You know what I mean? And then she's like voluntarily into it, which is a B story of the whole thing.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Two things I love. You hit the bullseye. I love how we don't see, this movie's not about the formation of the gang. The gang is already like operating. What we see is Jennifer sort of tripping in, you know, falling into the situation of being in this gang and not being able to get out, and watching her slowly accept it until the end, until like the last act where she is like, she's finally like, all right, there's no return. I am in. Fuck this world. Fuck the police. I am in. I'm going to take matters in my own hands.
At the exact moment where she has a choice to be out, like she's never had a clearer way out.
Yeah.
And that's when she commits.
Yeah. We should say there's the threat of she can't leave because the gang, like they make it known that like, we can't let you leave alive because you know too much. You're going to ruin our situation here. It's very much like probably what real gangs are like, you know, like you can't leave, you know, you know too much, you know what I'm saying? So there's that's like kind of what keeps her sticking around when she doesn't really want to in the beginning, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The interplay between the members of the gang is just so tenuous and not cut and dry. I love how they all have different opinions. I love like some of them, you know, I guess you just don't picture it because they're all of the singular mind of, you know, like killing rapists because they're the worst. But the way they just go about treating each other, like some of them are so hard-assed and hard-edged that, you know, it's amazing to see this writing of this movie kind of flow. They're all working towards the same goal, but they're just like the way they treat each other and the way, you know, some of them have to stay. It's like they're women in prison or something. It's like a women in prison movie, but they're not in prison. Like they're the ones that are getting away with crime and do it. Like they have the power. They're not, you know, like under lock and key or something and having to form gangs. They're just voluntarily together with each other for the most part.
That's a good point, bringing up the prison thing. Cause there's that scene where I think the cops go through the history of all the members and it seems like a lot of them did time. So I think that's probably where they kind of like learned that mentality.
I hadn't even thought about that, but that's absolutely true. I mean, that's probably how they learned to survive and learned how to outwardly like learn to control and manipulate and just interact with people, even if they're all on the same side in the same hideout working at the same bar, you know, like they're going to force they're going to force Jennifer to do what they want to do. You know,
poor Jennifer.
I know.
My God. The most nerve-wracking train ride probably of her life, knowing she's wanted for the murder of her husband. She arrives in New York, almost gets raped, and then has to kill her rapist. It's like, oh my God, get a hotel room, please, and a meal?
Literally, that's all she wants to do, is just step foot into a bedroom and just disappear for a while. She's forced to kill for a second time in 24 hours.
Oh my God.
Crazy shit.
I love this movie.
I know. And every every cop in this movie is just feels like the genuine article to the nth degree. Dude, they all feel like, I don't think I've ever felt like everyone is a New York cop until these New York cops are on screen.
Wow.
Every one of them, for all their trashy behavior and their accents and their behavior towards each other and their willingness to just curse the hell out of,
it was awesome.
I don't want to say they're admirable, but to see it was awesome.
It was such a great depiction of the other side of this. Like, if you think this gang of girls killing rapists is bad, wait till you get a look. I mean, not that they were like that bad, but like the stuff they infer and the way they would backstab each other and just like they're all trying to one-up each other to get the better jobs and the promote. Oh my God. Nightmare. And I totally, the movie had me going because the main detective, Billy, she's a female detective who's sort of like in charge of solving all the murders in the city. And she's the one with like the theory that, yeah, I think it's a gang of vigilantes maybe. There's a point in the movie where she gets suspended and stuff. And I was like, oh, she's going to join the gang. I was like, she's totally going to defect. Because the police force suspended, they fucked her over, you know, they blamed her for killing the judge for getting her partner killed and all this stuff. And
yeah,
the judge accused her of threatening threatening him with a gun. And I was like, oh, she's totally turning. She's going to be, but she didn't. But I loved how Jennifer, like she tried to turn Jennifer into an informant. And fucking Jennifer fucking turned the tables on her and locked her to an abandoned fence under the Manhattan Bridge and cold cocked her. Oh my God.
But to see Jennifer struggle minutes before that, because she could get away with everything that she's done up until now, as long as she snitched on the people that,
oh, totally.
You know,
yeah.
Essentially, she has grown to hate over the last half of the movie because of the way everybody's treating each other and the way, you know, they're not handling it the way she would handle things. She was so close until there was like one last straw where she's like, no, we're all doing this for a reason and I can't forget that.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
It's fucking insane.
Yeah. And the whole group almost implodes because, The leader, what was her name? Jessie. Jessie's sort of like the leader of the group. She's the super gung-ho one who will never stop. And like, she's like, I want to go kill he was a mafia guy who was like on trial for rape or something. And he has a horrible, this dungeon is like a QAnon wet dream. What's going on in this basement? And they show us.
Oh my God.
Sickening.
This is out of a different kind of movie that we would cover.
Yeah. but she gets herself, she goes there by herself. Cause everyone, the whole gang's fighting. She's like, fuck you guys. I'm going to go do this myself, but she gets caught. And so she's prisoner over there. And then the rest of the gang, it helps them come together. Like, fuck it. We're going in Magnificent Seven style or something.
Yeah.
I do want to hit that point that I liked how you said how the girls, like they're not like a united front. They're not like all good soldiers. They all have their like varying degrees and theories like about what they're doing. And they're not like they're sitting around the campfire when they're out in the woods practicing shooting. And like the ones like basically says, she doesn't say not all men, but she's basically saying not all men, you know? I thought that was interesting, which is
you know, she believes in what she's doing and killing the bad men, but to say that kind of thing around some of the other members of the gang, like, you gotta watch your ass, you know, because you'll get killed just by saying, you know, sticking up for men in general.
Yeah.
But she had her point of view, you know, she's still doing what needs to be done, man. When doing what needs to be done is shoving pool cues up soap opera stars' asses.
Oh my God. I love that they were like, oh, these two guys are probably middling celebrities on a soap opera. That doesn't matter to us. We're still going to torture them for fun.
Right? Yeah. they're like, well, I guess we can't kill them because there'll be like heat, yeah, but let's fucking sodomize them because they'll never tell anybody. They're too cool to tell anybody that they got pool cues in their assholes, you know, which was like, it was perfect, you know, because without even being said, we as the audience are thinking, well, they're not going to tell anybody what just happened, you know,
but totally.
they still got, you know, what they deserved for being like complete animals in this go-go bar.
God.
The Widow's Den. Fucking amazing bar name.
Yeah. I love the feckless, the owner of the bar who like, they vaguely said she was like a feminist in the 60s or something, but she was just like, she was just like an old lady who owned a bar. You know, she just didn't, I don't know. She didn't seem like she had any ideologies and she wasn't really like, I guess she was like backing the gang, but not really. I don't know.
Right.
So weird. Yeah.
I just liked how she was like, at a certain time, she was just asking them to be good or something.
Like,
please behave or something. Yeah. Like, she knew they were probably trouble when they all get going. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she was just like Mrs. Garrett or something.
Yeah, exactly. Gang. She was Mrs. Garrett. That's exactly what she was. Oh, girls.
Yeah.
my favorite gang member was Priscilla, played by Veronica Cruz. She was awesome.
She was amazing.
Yeah,
she's the other one that
she had my favorite performance, I think, in the movie. She was just so good.
She was the one left standing at the end with Jennifer, right?
Or was she? Oh yeah, yeah, she was. Yeah. When they go to that diner at the end. Yeah. She's the last one with Jennifer.
Wow, it looks like there's a there must be a friggin' making of that was made there last year on the Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah,
release.
I was bummed when I saw that. I was like, "Fuck, I need that." Yeah, it's like 50 minutes long. I'm dying to see this.
It's a long time.
Gosh, if anyone, man, we gotta see that. I gotta get a copy of it. Gnarly castration, Dale. Should we talk about that? like they don't show scenes of it. I mean, you just see the knife go below the frame, but then I think when the police are doing their investigation, they pull back the body bag cover or whatever.
Yeah.
And they show the mess down there. Oh God.
Oh God. Yeah. I gotta give, I don't know the story. Maybe that's why we need the documentary, but yeah. I don't know like the budget. I don't know what went into it, but you'll read and I think that it was very tastefully done because, you know, the graphic violence of rape and stuff was never done on camera.
Yeah.
But the gore bits, like the getting shot and stuff like that, was really, really well executed on camera
for
movie we were working with here. It was like star studded squibbing. And
yeah, there's placement. A headshot with like a fountain of blood. That I was like, oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
The special effects on this thing.
Yeah. And this movie looks, I wish we had this documentary because did you feel like this, just looking at the fashion in this movie, were you like, this can't be 97. This feels, for some reason it felt older.
Like, yeah. I felt, it felt to me, maybe I'm getting my 90s mixed up, but it felt like it was 92.
Yeah. That's 91. What I kept thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I kept thinking. Like all the fashion, like it just, I don't know. But maybe, you know, maybe it's because like, I mean, movie fashion's a little bit different. It's a little more cutting edge. So, you know.
Yeah.
Your memory of fashion kind of changes through the years. So it's like, yeah, of course people were still wearing their clothes they bought in 1992. So, but I love the clothes. I loved all the baggy like trench coats the girls wore and the baggy jeans and oh man, I loved it.
The army print, that big oversized army print jacket that the one girl was wearing, but it was like gray and white, like you know, one of the snow G.I. Joes. Who was the snow guy in G.I. Joe?
Oh, Snow Job.
Snow Job. Yeah, like it was that print.
Terrible
it was that
name.
Camera print. But God, the whole tirade that the cop goes on about how, you know, it's a boys club and if she had a dick that she would be, you know, like rising to the top of the precinct and stuff like that. You just think at that point that she's going to just give it all up. I mean, she's suspended, right? So she doesn't have a badge.
Yeah.
She's just sick of it. And I mean, to see these, she's the only woman in the room when all these cops are like making rape jokes and calling, like every one of them go out of their way to call a woman sweetie or even the ones that aren't like the cops are just treating women so disgustingly. And she is just there to like behold to it all. And she knows she can't say a thing.
Yeah.
But she's like subjected to it the entire time.
It's like the mirror. It's like the mirror. It's the reverse of Jennifer. It's like that she's in the same situation. She's basically in a gang, you know?
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
She can't rat on her friend, on her coworkers.
Right. Because who she's going to tell that's going to run it up to, you know, somebody who matters. It doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Cause they're all high-fiving each other.
Ugh. Mm. And this, who was their boss, is it Lieutenant Rizzo, this guy?
Jeez.
He was like a real, I mean, some of these cops looked like the real deal. These guys, they were so perfect. Oh my God.
That guy was amazing.
Yeah.
And the guy that, Jesus, they make it a joke about the 12-year-old, like that one cop who's like creepy looking with the like blonde ear length hair. Oh man, that guy was creepy. But that Lieutenant Rizzo looked familiar.
Oh, he's in a lot of stuff. He's in a lot of Spike Lee movies. He got Game, Summer, Sam, Clockers, Black Klansman. Wow. Yeah. So
I've
seen him in something. He was great.
He was in Sopranos. That's where I know him from.
Oh, is he? Oh, I had a feeling.
Yeah. He'd be in there.
That fucking scene at the end, after Billy gets all the credit for busting the sex dungeon lair, and he takes her out to dinner to celebrate, and he's like, come on, you can tell me what really happened. Come on, it's like such a slimy, just like pressing.
I know,
like, dude, you're her boss. Chill out.
Yep. Oh. He's like, it's cut and dry. It's over and done with. Like, you know, whatever I hear now is, you know, he's ready to like rat out to internal affairs because, you know, like it's going to get him further. And she doesn't budge. She won't talk because she knows it's not going to get her anywhere.
Yeah, no, she knows.
The whole
play that game.
I mean, the whole argument when she has her gun pointed at Jennifer and was it Priscilla?
Yeah.
And Jennifer's just like,
oh, a little just Mexican let us go. Standoff there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a great scene.
God, that speech that Jennifer gives was amazing.
Yeah.
And she sold it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Completely.
I was so happy when they got to walk out of there. I was like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I was fully prepared for a shitty ending to this movie for some reason. I was like, this is too good. But man. It's great. They stuck to their guns and they.
Yes, they did exactly.
It. Oh my God. This sex dungeon, Dale, this guy, was this guy supposed to be German? What was this guy? I could not figure it out.
Yeah. I have no idea what this guy.
What mafia was he in?
Yeah. Is it like Yugoslavian?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't pretend to know, but he wasn't Italian.
But oh my God, this sick dungeon where like people wearing stupid feather masks. There's poor Jesse, the leader of the gang, is like having no anesthesia surgery.
The doctor is fucking flaying her skin off. Yeah. Like what? Like this is another level of sex dungeon, whatever the fuck it's like.
Yeah. There's girls chained up. There's like, I don't know what else is happening. There's guests there who I guess they just came to the party. Like, they're enjoying the live open surgery. I don't know. Oh my God. It's sick. And nothing better than the girls busting in and just mowing everyone down.
Oh my God. I know, right? They're just like, we don't care where we end up. we need to put a stop to this by opening up fire. You know what I mean? Like
that was the other brutal aspect of this that like it kept rubbing me the wrong way. Cause I was like, no, you have to have a line, but they would kill everyone. Even like the girls that were chained up in that dungeon. Like,
yeah.
Like, I guess they just considered them collateral damage. They're just like, no, we can't, when we're in the moment, we can't be picking and choosing. We gotta,
they've seen too much, right?
Yeah. I mean, we gotta take care of business here, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. That shit was, man, like that shit was next level when the guy, like, when the guy dips down and like starts kissing Jenner, like Jesse's flayed skin, like the bloody flayed areas. And then he kisses that woman. Oh my God. That was sick. That was a different movie altogether. And it's like, that's their fetish. And like, that's their all into it. It's like, what the fuck is happening?
Well, she was not into it. She slapped him afterwards.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She was okay with the woman getting flayed, but, you know, she didn't want to be kissed by, you know.
It's probably her husband. He probably dragged her to this party.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you're disgusting.
Yeah. She finally, like, convinced him to take her to one of these.
He's a banker.
Yeah, yeah. God. And he does this twice a year.
Yeah. This is his Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, he just acts like a complete animal. And, you know, she's like, I don't know you right now.
He's hyper all day leading up to it.
Yeah.
So excited.
God, I liked her hair, that blonde with the mask on. How she had
it was confusing because I thought she was, for some reason, I thought she was Jesse for a minute. I was like, is that
so
Jesse?
Did I.
Yeah.
Especially the way she was reacting.
Yeah. Man, what a ride this movie was. Good Lord.
Till the very end. I mean, they're in the diner. And, you know, there's like one last example of not just, they can take it. They can take the shit from the men. But when the one guy talks to the waitress and is like, don't make me tell your husband to put you in your place again or something like that. It was like,
oh my God. Yeah.
Bagoosh. That's it. That's it. Yeah. Like time to get shit started once again.
Yeah. And that whole time I was like, I hope she's ready to be in a girl gang. Cause
Yeah, exactly. Like there's just no redeemable man in this whole fucking movie.
I can't wait for Gun for Jennifer 2 with the crew on the road throughout the US and Canada.
Yeah. It's like Salem's Lot, but for vigilante girl gang. Yeah.
Oh, I loved it. I love that they would just like watch the TV in the bar and just like, oh, we got to kill that guy.
Mm-hmm. Add it to the list. How did you find that? How was this movie on your watch list for a long time? Or how did you find out about this movie?
I don't know. I have no memory. It was on my watch list. Really don't know.
The best ones usually are.
One aspect I got to. The music in this is incredible.
Oh, dude.
I'm not super familiar with a lot of the music, but it's like, it's all female bands of the era. So it's all like 90s kind of female punk bands. And they even have, there's a great scene in the middle of the movie where one of the bands is playing live. It looks like they shot a real show.
It did.
The lead singer's topless, but not in like a tantalizing way. She's got like an anarchy symbol painted on her stomach. And she's got like a lifelike dildo sticking out of her pants, and she makes a guy in the audience suck it, and then she cuts it off, and fake blood sprays all over the audience.
Oh my God,
it's incredible.
And what she's singing about in particular is just like goes along with the movie. It's perfect. The whole setup is perfect.
All the music goes so well. Oh my God, I was like, you know me, I was furiously seeing if someone had ever printed a soundtrack to this, which they haven't. We gotta, someone's gotta get on this because.
Yeah, we gotta get the, what are those people in Georgia with the record label or the.
Somebody.
The your people.
Anybody. Yeah, the Sludge People. Like, shout out Sludge People. They should be putting this
Sludge People
on tape.
Sludge People, call us. Let's do like a, let's do like a team up here.
Yeah.
Let's start make some calls.
One of the bands, Cake Like, is what's her name from the state is in the band. She sings in the band, Dale. And I know I'm a big state fan, and I know you're a big state fan.
Carrie Kenny?
Carrie Kenny, yeah.
She's in the band Cake Like, which is
She's in Cake Like. She sings, I think she plays bass or guitar. But yeah, a couple of their songs are in this, I believe. Yeah. I was like, holy shit.
I know what I'm listening to tomorrow.
And they were signed to Neil Young's record label, Vapor Records.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cake Like was an all-female indie rock band based in New York City. 93 to 99.
Yeah. Yeah, I had no idea. She was even a musician. It's fantastic.
Yeah, the soundtrack was amazing.
I'm going to go through this soundtrack and track down all these bands because I really, especially that opening, I love that opening track. I was convinced it was one of the Deal sisters from the Breeders, but I don't think it was. But oh my God, music was so good.
So good.
All right, Dale. Let's dip our little fingies into that dirty old mailbag.
Found on the curb on the streets of New York City, ran over by a bus, but we found it and we need to open it once again. 315-544-0966. That's the official Bat and Spider hotline. Or batandspiderpod@gmail.com. I am checking the spam folder just in case. And no, there's nothing there. So we're going to get the emails first, and then we're going to get a voicemail. Okay. First up, hobo salary.
Oh, my God.
Hall of Famer. Hobo says, hey, boys, it's been a while since I watched along. A Gun for Jennifer sounded too good to pass up. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of folks, rape revenge movies aren't really my thing, not even because I find them offensive. Mostly they're just boring. They fall right in with home invasion movies as one of my least favorite exploitation subgenres. Luckily, this movie leaned more towards Ms. 45 than I Spit on Your Grave. In a lot of ways, A Gun for Jennifer felt like the mid-90s Angelina Jolie vehicle Foxfire by way of an Alex Delaney comic.
Wow. Hashtag Alex Delaney. What's the name of that book? I just picked that up this weekend.
His
new book. Available from Floating World Comics. Vengeance is for the Living, written by Keenan Marshall Keller and drawn by Alex Delaney. Alex Delaney, great artist. Fantastic. This was a great call out, Hobo, because this is like, his cartooning would fit this movie if this was a comic book. Go ahead. But go ahead.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I'm going to have to look up this movie, Foxfire. Over the top sleaze and violence and aggressively 90s in the best way. Great pick, Chuck. P.S. Wish I'd seen this 20 years ago. My band, The Cum Lords, would have totally stole that severed dick gag. My God, Hobo. Yes. God, the legend grows.
Oh my God, The Cum Lords. The
legend fucking grows.
Yeah, that dick gag. I mean, God, could you imagine being at a show and that happens on stage? Well,
yeah. Oh,
fuck cheering. Yeah. Cut it off.
Cut it off.
Cut the dick off.
Thank you, Hobo.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to see Foxfire too. I always see that on Angelina Jolie's filmography because I check it every other day. But no, I don't. But I've seen that title, Foxfire, in my life. And I was like, what is that movie?
It took them 17 years to learn the rules and 1 week to break them all.
Mm.
Foxfire.
Wow. Hackers.
Next up, Chuck, we have a voicemail.
Okay.
So I'm going to
take your word for it.
Believe me, you'll believe we have a voicemail if Riverside actually plays it. Stay tuned.
Chuck and Dale, it is H. Just calling to say I'm so stoked for the run up to 200. Congratulations for you all hitting this huge milestone in just a few weeks. Chuck just signed up for the Luddite version of Chesley. Cannot wait to read that book. Looks phenomenal. My shelves are too full for any more paper books, but thank you for making that digital copy available. And then question for you guys. Would you ever consider doing some Vietnam movies? Be kind of fun to hear Dale, or World War II. Just, it was really fun listening to the World War Z, Strike Force Z, whatever the hell that team was. It was just really fun listening to you guys start to get into a little bit of the World War II stuff, and would love to hear some Vietnam talk. Thanks. Love you guys. Talk soon. Bye.
Co-host, co-founder of the Escape Hatch podcast.
Yeah. Formerly Dune Pood.
Yeah, he's all digital, Chuck. So, you know, it's like,
I know, I caved, but yeah, there, I have added a Luddite reward tier on the crowdfunder.com/herecomeschesley. Still running. We got 8 days left as I record this. Let's do it. Let's get this. Come on.
Oh yeah. Congrats on the success so far on the crowdfunder, Chuck. It's the numbers are looking good. Numbers are looking real good.
Yeah. I'm very happy. Now, as far as us doing war movies, yeah, I'd love to. There are, I think I have a few on my watch list that would probably fit our show. But yeah, maybe that's something we should consciously pick one of these days.
Yeah, I definitely would be opposed to it. I know there's, you know, when in the middle and end of Vietnam, there's definitely Vietnamese there's definitely Vietnam War exploitation movies and whatnot that came out. So, I mean, we're ripe for that. Right, Chuck?
Yeah.
We're ripe for it. Yeah, that was it. That was the voicemail segment, Chuck.
That's it? Okay. All right.
We did it. Riverside, you did it.
Cinch that bag shut so no more New York City detritus gets in the opening.
No, we can't handle anymore. We don't have enough Purell in the HQ here to.
Dale.
But Manny had a cumin, had a jetty, had a jetty, jetty, devil, gotta be the
What's the status of Aerosmith? Are they on tour? Didn't they announce a big tour? Are they out there? Are they doing the
thing? Yeah, they went on tour and then they put their tour on hiatus because of throat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, right. I mean, yeah, I'm not going to lie. I want to go see them, but I'm not going to lie. I would. Until then, you're stuck with me.
God, you know? Could you imagine you up there with Joe and the boys? Oh, man.
Oh, God.
Now, that I would pay $400 a ticket for. Easy.
Really?
Yeah, are you kidding me? If you were singing up there with Aerosmith?
That means a lot.
With John Aerosmith and the boys? Which one's Aerosmith, Dale?
Me, John Aerosmith. Brad Hamilton.
Brad Hamilton.
You know, God, the one.
Imagine getting in one of the world's biggest rock bands and your name is Brad Hamilton. Lottery winner, that guy.
God.
Sorry, Brad. I don't know you.
Goddamn shame. Sorry, Brad.
I shouldn't talk bad about people I don't know. Dale. What are we going to watch next week?
I don't know. You know, I spent some time at work today staring at my lists, various lists. I'm not even consistent with where I put my Bat and Spider potential list. Sometimes I just put it on my watch list. Sometimes I put it on a private Bat and Spider potential watch list. I just put it somewhere and then I'm like, I forget all about it later.
Yeah.
For what? What's it going to be for episode 199?
Oh my God, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's just a regular episode. They're all so regular close. Episodes.
It's a regular episode. But Manny had a cumin, had a dream, you got a good old dad, you never gonna be the same. All right, I think I have a pick here. I think I do. Chuck.
Okay.
Because it's just a regular episode.
That's what I said. Regular ep. Totally
just
regular.
A regular old ep. Yep. 199. Ep 199. Let's just do it. You know, this is, I believe, not an English movie, but in 1969, The Cremator came out.
How do you spell cremator?
Good question. Cremator.
Oh, I was close. No one will suffer. Wow, what a tagline. Mr. Mr. Kopfringle enjoys his job at a crematorium in Czechoslovakia in the late 1930s. He likes reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead and espouses the view that cremation relieves earthly suffering. What have you gotten us into?
Mm.
Oh, but it's been on my list with for a little while. Kitty cat. Right there. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Siraj Hirsch. That sound, was that convincing? My pronunciation? It's
convincing enough for me. This is, I don't know, is this could be a whole totally new direction we take the show in. This could be more of the same. Who knows?
God, who knows? Where are we going to watch this thing? Criterion or Apple TV rental?
There you go.
Wow, highbrow. Highbrow.
Mm-hmm. The Criterion or Apple TV only?
Both expensive options.
Pinky's out. Pinky's out.
Look at the scores on this movie, though. Woo!
Right? Do you think these are Pinky's out people? That's what I worry about.
I don't follow a lot of Pinky's out people, so I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued.
Yeah, same.
A lot of them love it. So here we go. Wow, Dale, good pick. I mean, well, that's.
Right. Assumingly.
We'll see next week if it's a good pick. Yeah, but Dale, thank you for being my friend.
Yeah, Chuck, absolutely. Thank you for being my friend. I love you, buddy.
I love you.
Crowdfunder.com/herecomescheslie.
Thanks.
Batandspider.com. Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/batandspider. We just put one in the can tonight, folks.
Mm.
It's a good one. Special guest and all.
You're not going to believe who we got in that dungeon. You're not going to believe it.
I mean, and they voluntarily said yes.
Yeah.
We didn't have one over on them or anything.
I know. We didn't have, there was no blackmail involved. It was great.
No, not this time.
Mm-mm.
Until then, until next week, until God, like, I don't know, Chuck, do we start making plans for episode 200? Is it too late? It's just a regular episode. You know?
I'm too busy dodging trees falling on me to plan it that far ahead.
We take 1 week at a time from now on because we never know what's going to happen with these trees.
Yeah. They're after me.
They're after you, buddy. You goddamn trees. Until next time.
Toodaloo.
Same bat time, same bat channel. We love you here in Bat Spider. We love you out there.
Yeah. Join us for the crematorium. The crematorium.
Love you. Love you all. Bye. I'm hitting stop.
Our theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck Podcast.